Okay, it is that time again here on Radio Wivenhoe with Chat, where I speak with many people around the town and try and find out a lot more about their stories, what's happening, what's going off. And for this week on With Chat, I think we've got something of a first. I think I'm going to be as brash, as bold to say, a world exclusive here in Wivenhoe. With Chat this week is going to be the platform for launching a local Wivenhoe book. It's coming out very, very soon, or maybe by the time you hear this, it should be out and should be available. And the book is The Story of Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club, and it's by John Wiseman. And so, no surprises, John is my guest for this particular show. So, John, welcome.
Thank you, Jason. Nice to be here.
And so, the book is It's The Story of Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club. So, we ought to, I think, clear up first, John. What is your own background or your own involvement with the cricket club?
Well, my earliest involvement with the cricket club was as a small colt, a 12-year-old, 13-year-old. I can't remember exactly when I first went over in 1971. Having moved into the village in the mid-60s, my earliest recollections were watching England win the World Cup from our front room in Field Way with my parents. Then moved to joined the cricket club in 1971. Played my first senior game in 1972, and with the exception of about 8 years in the 80s when I was away training to be an engineer, have played there every season since. So I've played there from 1972 to 2011. I'm now the president of the cricket club, which is an honour I treasure highly. And in 1971, when I toddled over there as a small boy, would never have believed that one day I would be president of the cricket club, but have been for 4 years now, and enjoying it.
So that's quite a journey from going as a colt, playing cricket there, and then, you know, having this really quite prestigious role as president. And so what does your duties and responsibilities involve as president?
Well, as president, I'm nominally a figurehead, but as any president worth his salt of any serious cricket club, you get to do an awful lot more than be a figurehead. So my responsibilities really are anything that needs doing. I'm the manager of our under-11s, which is something I've taken up these last 2 years, having qualified as a formal ECB Level 1, which is a very junior level, coach. So I'm the under-11s manager. And really, in my second year, I'm beginning to find the huge rewards that come from seeing small boys turn into budding good cricketers. So I do all that. And then, of course, my last year and a half of my life has been doing the book. I started out on this in spring of last year, and it's been a year and a half, almost. It will be by the time we're published, if you go back to the very first meeting we ever had about the book. But apart from that, as a committee member, it's all things that you might associate with a sports or social club. It's concerns about where the next fundraising event's going to come from. It's making sure membership stays high. It's making sure people are happy, sorting out minor squabbles behind the scenes, encouraging the other committee members, just generally being a good all-round egg.
Okay, which I'm sure you are, John, from what I've been hearing and what I've been seeing myself with Cricket at Rectory Road. So we should, I think, talk about the book. This is the main purpose for this particular web chat. And so it is in front of us now. I can see this spectacular volume. It's the story of Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club, which I think is a story which needs to be told, needs to be documented. Where did the idea first come from for the book, please?
Well, before I ask your question, Jason, may I be a bit of a pedant and tell you that the title of the book is actually The Story of Wivenhoe Cricket. And that's important because Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club didn't come into existence until 1840. And the book goes right back to 1765, when the first cricket was played at Wivenhoe. So in 1765, there was certainly no Wivenhoe Town Cricket Club, that's for sure. And I will say as well that I've borrowed a little from the title of Nicholas Butler's excellent book, The Story of Wivenhoe. I never met Nicholas Butler, unfortunately, but I found his book to be absolutely superb source of context for my history. And his references, for those that know his book, are meticulously quoted and exceptionally useful. So I take my hat off to Mr. Butler. He's done a fantastic job. He called his book The Story of Wivenhoe. I call my book The Story of Wivenhoe Cricket as a sort of a sign of respect for what he did with his book. So that's me being a bit of a pedant, Jason. Forgive me for that.
That's worth clarifying, yes. No, good.
Now, you asked me how I got into the idea. The idea really was born from one of several directions, really. One is simply a love of this club that I've been a member of now for 40 years-ish. As I say in my introductory piece in the book, all those years of dressing room banter and toil in the sun leave you with a very deep affection for the club that you play for and the players you've played with. And it was a chance, or something I wanted to do, to sort of set down my feelings and respect for that. Also, as I began to get a bit older, I began to realise what a serious social contribution the club makes to the community of Wivenhoe. There's a circle of life as I see it, and I've referred to that in the book a couple of times. People come to the club, they take up office, they do duties, they help, they have fun, they grow a little older, they stop playing cricket, they move on, more people come through, they do the same, they move on. And in my, you know, sentimental view of life, no one ever actually leaves forever. They may not come back very much, but they're always forever part of the club they helped to build. And some of the older members, I'm talking now about people in their 80s, would occasionally come to the club. I'm talking here about 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I thought they really didn't, they weren't made welcome enough. They would come and watch from the boundary. And I began to find out a bit about the history and realised these people had contributed a huge amount back in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And it seemed very wrong that nobody really knew who'd done what and who'd made what contribution. So it was a chance to sort of put that right and set down as a, for all time, I guess, the contributions that people have made over the last 30, 40, 50 years. And of course, people who played pre-war are pretty much all dead. In fact, I know of nobody who's played cricket for Wivenhoe pre-war who's still alive. But there are, gladly, several people who played relatively soon, or very soon after the war.
And so for some of the content for the book, I imagine doing the research, so a lot of it would be spoken research for the players that were playing post-war, but going back to 1765, how on earth, John, did you manage to find some of the information in there?
Well, the 1765 match has been written about in pamphlets and other people's books before, so I'll confess that that wasn't a piece of brilliant research by me. I was able to get that from other references. I believe Nicholas Butler covers it. I believe Dick Barton covered it in his book. Anyway, the 1765 match has been mentioned before. I did go back to the Ipswich Journal, found the original Ipswich Journal in which the 1765 match is reported, and that's where the book starts. And the 1765 match was a wonderful match played for by 11 invited men. The prize for the winner was 11 wigs of value, 11 guineas. And the advertisement in the Ipswich Journal appears in the book. So that's how I got the show on the road, or the story started, as it were. There were then a number of similar games played over the 1770s, and they were for waistcoats or hats. Some of them, one of them in particular, was followed by a ladies' race, the prize for which was a Holland smock. This was a linen undergarment worn by ladies of the day. These were not these races were fairly cynically organised to become a cynical attempt to add a titillating titbit to the end of the day for the men that were there to watch. But that was life in 18th century Britain. So cricket started in 1760s, 1770s. The Ipswich Journal was the journal of the day that carried the advertisement for these matches. And I dug those out of nothing more difficult than Essex County Library. There are some online references as well that will give you a clue as to where to go to look in newspapers in the 1800s. But it was Essex County Library that helped me with most of the research.
So going back to 1765, can we physically identify where was this match played in Wivenhoe?
We can't identify for certain where it was played, Jason. For various reasons, my belief is it was likely to have been played at the top end of the village, perhaps on Wivenhoe Heath in the area between the Colchester Road and the fork that goes off down towards the football club. The 1770 matches were definitely played at the bottom of the village because lunch was provided at the Sign of the Sun, which was the pub in Brook Street, no longer there, alas, because cricket would have been played more than likely on the Saltings, which is an area of the marshes which was used for various sporting events, down near Cook's Lower Shipyard, where the sailing club now is. But in terms of where cricket was played regularly, there are six grounds upon which cricket was played regularly in Wivenhoe. And I'll start in about the 1850s, when cricket was first played in a properly organised fashion, supported by the patron who was patrons of the club, who were most usually the residents of Wivenhoe Hall. Cricket was first played over on the Millfield, which is near the school, Millfield School, at Bowes Road, and there's a flat area of ground there where we're pretty sure the cricket pitch was. Then at 10 Acres, which is the paddock near where the Bowls Club now is, which was part of the Wivenhoe Hall estate, which was the club's ground until 1907, when the club was thrown off it by the then patron and resident of Wivenhoe Hall, Alexander K. Barlow, in a fit of pique after he was not elected as chairman of the council. That cast Wivenhoe into the wilderness years. They did try for a few years to play on a pitch lent to them by the Watcham family behind the Flag Inn up at Vine Farm, and we're pretty sure that pitch was likely to have been somewhere in the vicinity of the end of Lees Road behind the Flag. So that was the third pitch. The club then managed to play again for several seasons after the First World War, probably only three seasons, down on the Saltings again, whilst it tried to find a better home. And then in 1922, it played its first games on the surplus council, the surplus housing land behind the council houses in Rectory Road, where we now play. Meantime, occasional games had been played at Wivenhoe Park at invitation of the Gurdon Rabots, and then more recently the club has hired out the ground occasionally. So the six grounds that Wivenhoe has played at, in summary, in roughly chronological order, are the Millfield, 10 Acres, Wivenhoe Park, Vine Farm, the Saltings, and then most recently at Rectory Road.
And you say most recently, John, at Rectory Road. That has been, going back 90 or so years. The club has got a really strong, firm base there now. Do you think that is, I wouldn't say the final resting place, it sounds a bit macabre, but do you think the club now has got itself set up firmly and established and it will always remain at Rectory Road?
Another good question, Jason. The answer is yes, but never say never. By which I mean that the club owns the ground. We are the freeholders, thanks to some insightful presidency and secretarial excellence by George Slaughter and W.G. Lovelace in the mid-30s. And now we own that ground, and other clubs are very jealous of it. We were invited in 1998... by Lafarge, who owned the disused workings of sand and gravel workings, to consider selling up and moving on to a very much larger ground in and around the disused workings or backfield workings that lie around the fishing lake behind the cricket club. And that was, on the face of it, a very attractive proposition, but there were two or three unassailable problems in the end. One was that there was just too much community feeling that the cricket club belonged in Rectory Road, and a ground with an entrance up near Bowes Road was just not the thing. The cricket club was too much part of the community of Wivenhoe to move that far out. So there was a lack of support for that reason. Even more difficult was the fact that the funding to provide the facilities to make an up-and-working cricket club were too great. Lafarge, although they had a cunning business plan, it just wouldn't run to that much money. And thirdly, the ground on offer had been backfilled in the 70s and 80s with some pretty rubbish backfill. And Ray Watcham, farmer Ray Watcham, formerly of this parish, told me personally that he'd tried to farm it and it was no good for farming. So it would certainly have been no good for cricket. So we stayed put and happy to still be where we are.